It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
The other important one that we see a lot of when credit cards or automobile payments are forgiven is what's called the insolvency exclusion. If a taxpayer had the debt forgiven at a time when the total of all that person's debts compared to the value of that person's assets, the debts are greater than the value of the assets, then the IRS says you're insolvent and you can exclude an amount up to what that difference is.
Paul Harrison, low-income taxpayer clinic coordinator at the Community Tax Law Project, discusses the earned income tax credit, as well as whether forgiveness of debt is taxable income when you get a Form 1099-C after a creditor writes off a debt. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll hear about Virginia Free File that can help many Virginians file their income tax returns quickly, easily, and for free. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 157, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. On February 7, the Virginia Department of Taxation announced Virginia Free File, a partnership between the government and private tax software companies that can help many Virginians file their income tax returns quickly, easily, and for free. Through the IRS Free File Alliance, many private companies provide a choice of industry-leading software to millions of low- and moderate-income Americans so they can prepare and file their federal income taxes for free. Virginia now is one of 22 states that also offers a state Free File program, so residents can easily and accurately complete both their federal and state taxes. Last year, only a fraction of those who qualified for free tax return preparation and e-filing of their federal and state returns took advantage of Free File. This year, all Virginia taxpayers who earned $57,000 or less in adjusted gross income last year can go to the tax department's website to see if they qualify to use Virginia Free File. Because it encourages online tax filing, Free File has saved the Internal Revenue Service almost $105 million in processing costs. In Free File states such as Virginia, state governments also see these cost-saving benefits. By using Virginia Free File, people can be sure they have identified and claimed all of the tax credits and deductions that they deserve, especially the earned income tax credit, which can put much-needed money back in the pockets of Virginia families. For many families, the earned income tax credit is the single largest check or payment they receive during the entire year. Virginia families have many options to file their taxes for free, including the Virginia Free File program, which they can use with help from a volunteer at a local site or on their own from anywhere they are comfortable using the internet. Last season, volunteers helped Virginians claim nearly $31 million in tax refunds. Virginia Free File services are available online 24/7. Eligible taxpayers can use Virginia Free File anywhere they feel comfortable using the internet. There is nothing to download or buy. You can learn about Virginia Free File at www.virginiafreefile.org. To find out more and to file your taxes for free, go to www.tax.virginia.gov. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Borbas versus Virginia Employment Commission. From June 1990 to September 1991, Elizabeth Borbas worked as a correctional officer at Mecklenburg Correctional Center and received three separate citations for failing to follow policies designed to ensure prison security. She was discharged, and the Virginia Employment Commission disqualified her from unemployment compensation because her repeated security violations were deemed misconduct. But the Court of Appeals reversed, finding that her acts were simple mistakes, none of the reprimands involved the same prison security procedures, and that she never showed satisfactory ability to do her job. Absent a period of adequate job performance before the violations, the court could not find her acts were intentional. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Borbas versus Virginia Employment Commission is this week's Case That Changed the Commonwealth.
We're here at the Community Tax Law Project in Richmond, and we are speaking with Paul Harrison. He is the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic Coordinator at the Community Tax Law Project, and we will be talking today about tax tips for the tax year 2011, the filing that's due in April of 2012, and two very important topics, the Earned Income Tax Credit, as well as what to do when you get a Form 1099. Welcome back to the show, Paul.
Thank you, Marty. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you back. Will you tell our listeners, please, what exactly is the Earned Income Tax Credit?
The Earned Income Tax Credit is a program that now is over 30 years old. It's probably the largest anti-poverty program that the federal government has. In 2009, I believe, something over 9 million families were lifted out of poverty as a result of the Earned Income Tax Credit. Basically, it provides an opportunity for people who work in low-wage jobs to supplement their income with a refundable tax credit from the federal government.
So refundable means they might actually get money back or get more money back than they would without the Earned Income Tax Credit. What's the maximum Earned Income Tax Credit for the tax year 2011 that's going to be filed in April of 2012?
The maximum credit amount potentially available to a family that had three or more qualifying children would be $5,751.
And how much can a taxpayer earn and still claim the Earned Income Tax Credit? I gather that varies depending upon whether you have children, and if you do, how many children you have.
It varies both according to the number of children that you have, whether you have children, and your filing status, your marital status, as of December 31st of the tax year. So for a single taxpayer with no children, that taxpayer would be eligible for the EIC if they earned up to $13,660. That would double, roughly, for a married couple in the same circumstances with no children. If a family had one child, their earned income would have to be less than $36,052. With two children, the income would have to be less than $40,964. With three or more children, the income would have to be less than $43,998. Those are for single taxpayers, presumably filing as head of household and claiming children living with them.
And I gather the figures for taxpayers who are married filing jointly are somewhat higher, maybe $5,000 per year higher.
That's correct, Marty.
So I understand to get the earned income tax credit for having a child, you have to have what's called a qualifying child. What do we mean by a qualifying child?
In general, for most taxpayers, this would be a natural or biological or adopted child, a stepchild. The child of a younger sibling would be a qualifying child. Similarly, the children of your brothers and sisters, if you took them in, provided them with a home for more than half of the tax year, which here would be January 1st, 2011 to December 31st, 2011, then these children could be qualifying children as long as they are under 19 as of December 31st. There's an exception if the child is a full-time student, that 19 would be stretched up to 24. If a child is totally and permanently disabled, the child can be any age. The key factor for the earned income tax credit in most situations is, where does the child live? Is the child living with mom or dad, or are they living with a grandparent and living with an aunt or uncle? All of those are potentially circumstances in which the taxpayer would be eligible for the earned income tax credit.
Now, what happens if two people want to claim the same qualifying child? I gather only one is permitted to do so.
That's correct.
What's the rule there?
There's a complex set of what are called tiebreaker rules if more than one taxpayer claims a qualifying child. The first rule that we look to, and the one that resolves most of the cases that we see here at CTLP, is the what's called the residence test. Very often, in the most common circumstances, that when a couple breaks up, one parent is designated the custodial parent, and for the EIC purposes, under federal law, the custodial parent is the parent with whom the child lives for more than half the year, 6 months plus one day. And if we can show that the child was with one parent, even though the other parent or some other taxpayer claimed the child, if we can show that that child lived with this particular parent for more than half the year, that parent and only that parent is the eligible EIC recipient. Where we see things get to be more complex, and we see a lot of this now, is when families are so economically stressed that they begin to move back in with their own parents, and we might have two or more generations of a family living in one household. Potentially, the grandparents or the parents could claim the children as qualifying children for the earned income tax credit. However, the tiebreaker rules tell us that if any one of the claimants is the natural parent of the child, then the default would go to the parent. As we get into either parent against parent, in some cases, nowadays the economy is so bad, people will get divorced and continue living in the same household even though they're living separately. Their lives are separate and their economics are separate. But from the point of view of the IRS, the kids are living for the entire year with both parents. There, the tiebreaker rule would favor the parent with the larger adjusted gross income. This could, depending on the financial circumstances, make that taxpayer ineligible to claim the earned income tax credit because he or she might be making more than the maximum. Nonetheless, the other parent still could not claim, under the tiebreaker rule, could not claim the earned income tax credit.
And I understand that volunteer income tax assistance is available for people in the Richmond area,
yes.
In fact, all over the country. How do people go about locating that?
They can call the Richmond Metro Cash organization, MetroCash/Greater Richmond Earned Income Tax Credit Coalition. There are probably 25 or 30 different sites in the Greater Richmond, Central Virginia area. They are all coordinated through an umbrella organization called the Metro Cash Campaign. And people can also call 211 to get a referral to nonprofit services, and then they could call the Richmond United Way office and get specific directions to the nearest VITA program to them.
Now, the other topic that I wanted to talk about has to do with what people should do if they get, or even there's a threat that they will be given, an IRS Form 1099. First of all, what is a Form 1099?
A Form 1099 is a report form that the IRS requires businesses to file whenever they make a payment to an individual or an entity that exceeds $600. These are not payments for wages, which would be reported on a Form W-2. First, there are a variety of Form 1099s. There's a Form 1099-G, which tells us how much we got in our state refund from last year, which may or may not, in many cases, have an impact on our income for this year. There's a 1099-R that reports payments from a retirement program like an IRA or a pension fund. All these are potentially taxable payments that the IRS gets a report of from the people who made the payment. Often, what the IRS finds is that taxpayers don't bring those with them when they go to have their tax returns done, or they get lost in the pile of papers and they don't get entered into the person's tax form. The IRS has copies of these reports, and through a computer enforcement program called the Automated Underreporter Program, or the IRP program, the IRS eventually gets around to saying, hey, Paul Harrison, we have a report that you took out $3,500 or $4,000 from a retirement fund in 2011. Why didn't you put that on your tax return? And we think you owe more in taxes than you reported.
Now, you mentioned this is sent when a payment is made. But again, we hear that creditors and debt collectors say, well, we're going to send you, or we have sent you, a 1099. Why are they sending a 1099 when there has not been any payment?
The particular 1099 that you're referring to, Marty, is Form 1099-C, which is a report that a creditor, a lender, would file with the IRS when it cancels a debt. There's a case that goes back to the 1930s in which the Supreme Court outlined a rationale saying that when we take out a loan or we buy an item on an installment plan, such as a car or a mortgage on a house, we receive money that we are able to use, but we have no tax obligation for that money. The court rationalized that the reason for that was because we made a promise to pay the money back. We didn't really have any gain from the transaction. We had a temporary advance. If, for some reason, the loan doesn't get paid back, then the court rationalized that you had the use of the money, taxpayer, you got to use the money, now you don't have to pay the money back. That's gain for you. And so the amount of the forgiven debt was determined to be income. Congress liked this rationale so much that later on they put the exact provision into the Internal Revenue Code in Section 61. So cancel debt, even though you might have your car repossessed and your debt written off and you didn't actually get anything, you are conceived of by the IRS to have had income. The creditor will issue a Form 1099-C, which it will send to the IRS. There's a real question in my mind whether they always send these forms to the taxpayer who needs them. The taxpayers should report the income on their tax return form. Now, there are a couple of provisions in the code that permit taxpayers to exclude cancellation of debt income, and these are very important. The main exceptions that have been in the code for years are if the debt is forgiven in a bankruptcy proceeding, the forgiven amount can be excluded from income. The other important one that we see a lot of when credit cards or automobile payments are forgiven is what's called the insolvency exclusion. If a taxpayer had the debt forgiven at a time when the total of all that person's debts compared to the value of that person's assets, the debts are greater than the value of the assets, then the IRS says you're insolvent and you can exclude an amount up to what that difference is. So if I have, with my mortgage and car loan and credit card payments, if I have $150,000 worth of debt, and if they add up the value of all my assets and that only comes to $75,000, then I'm $75,000 insolvent. So if I had a debt forgiven, a credit card bill forgiven, where the balance was, say, $10,000 or $12,000, I could exclude that by filling out a called Form 982 that goes with a tax return that tells the IRS, I had this debt forgiven, this is the amount of the debt that was forgiven, I was insolvent, and this is what I want to exclude from my income.
So is the taxpayer required to fill out that form 982 when they get that 1099-C or learn that a 1099-C has been filed on them canceling debt, or can they just sort of shrug their shoulders and say, well, I'm insolvent, I know I'm insolvent, I don't need to report this, I don't need to do anything?
It's not an absolute requirement, but what the second taxpayer would run the risk of is that the IRS gets the return and then sometime later, usually 6 or 8 months after return filing, it will get the Form 1099-C from the creditor who canceled the debt. Eventually, the IRS computers will match the forms that were reported with my tax return and the forms that were received in that year for my wage and income account, and they will say, oh, there's a 1099-C here that Paul Harrison didn't claim and didn't account for on his tax return. I'm now in an audit situation under the automated underreporter program. So I have a headache, even though I might be able to say I was insolvent, here's the proof of the insolvency, and here's Form 982 that I didn't attach to my tax return. There might be no harm, but it will take me the time and energy and maybe, you know, 6 or 7 months of time to get to the point that I could have got to if I had simply filled out Form 982 and attached it to my original tax return.
So it sounds like taxpayers should be more proactive about that.
Exactly.
So this leads to my final question, which is, where should people go for help with tax law problems?
We do the best that we can do to answer questions here at CTLP. We get always get a lot of phone calls during tax filing season, and people can call us with their tax questions. Other good sources are, of course, the IRS itself. And, you know, particularly if you called and said, I received a Form 1099-C saying that a creditor had canceled my credit card debts or my car had been repossessed and the loan forgiven. Anyone at the IRS would, you know, ought to be able to say, you need to file. Take that to your return preparer and make sure your return preparer knows to fill out Form 982. One other source of information, a good source of information, would be the Taxpayer Advocate Service, which can also provide good information to taxpayers. Before we leave this topic, the one other area that's important for people to keep in mind is that if the debt cancellation occurred as a result of a home foreclosure, there is a special exclusion from taxable income for that circumstance. This was enacted in 2007 and affects foreclosures that have occurred in 2009, 10, and 11.
So I gather that provision has expired as of the end of 2011, unless it's
reenacted by Congress. And this continues to be a problem all across the country. And I think as long as there is a problem with lots of foreclosures and lots of people losing their homes, that we'll see a continuation of this particular exclusion.
Thank you very much. We have been with Paul Harrison. He is the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic Coordinator at the Community Tax Law Project, talking about the Earned Income Tax Credit and Form 1099-C's cancellation of debt. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you, Marty.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 46.2, which deals with motor vehicles. Under Code of Virginia Section 46.2-2814, as of July 1, 2009, no tow truck shall be operated in Virginia by any person who does not have a tow truck driver authorization document, unless the driver is towing a vehicle through Virginia, into Virginia from another state, or into another state from Virginia. All tow truck drivers must submit with their application the information needed to obtain a national criminal history record check, but a criminal record is not an automatic bar to the job. However, no driver is qualified to drive a tow truck unless he provides a written statement that he is not required to register as a sex offender. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral four, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. When you make a major purchase, the manufacturer or seller makes an important promise to stand behind the product. It's called a warranty. Join us next week when consumer protection attorney Patty Anderson talks about consumer warranties, when they apply, and how to enforce them in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on August 11, 2010. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.